Markets are often spoken of as though they could be perfected, as if perpetual growth, uninterrupted by downturns, were the natural goal. Policymakers and investors alike cling to the hope that with enough stimulus, enough intervention, enough clever engineering, recessions can be avoided altogether. Yet this view misunderstands the very nature of economic life. The cycle is not an error. The downturn is not a failure. Bear markets and recessions, however painful, are part of the necessary rhythm of capitalism. They are the moments in which excess is stripped away, in which discipline is restored, and in which the ground is cleared for renewal. Euphoria and excess, the bull market trap. Every bull market begins with a kernel of legitimacy. A new technology proves its worth. A reform promises greater efficiency. Credit becomes cheaper, liquidity becomes abundant, and the environment feels safe for risk-taking. At first, this dynamism fuels growth that seems justified. Investors reward innovation, valuations climb, and optimism spreads. But optimism has a habit of feeding on itself. As gains accumulate, caution recedes. What began as rational enthusiasm soon mutates into euphoria. In this environment, discipline collapses. Risk premia narrow, not because risks have vanished, but because markets collectively decide to ignore them. Venture capital becomes indiscriminate, funding not only promising ventures, but also any half-formed idea that can be dressed up with the right jargon. Pitch decks filled with buzzwords attract billions without the faintest evidence of feasibility. In such conditions, money is not allocated according to productive capacity or genuine demand, but according to narrative and momentum. This pattern is not new. It is the cycle described by Hyman Minsky in his financial instability hypothesis. Stability breeds confidence, confidence breeds complacency, and complacency breeds fragility. Each layer of optimism builds a structure more delicate than the last until it becomes unsustainable. Bull markets, in this sense, are not merely phases of expansion. They are the incubators of their own destruction, laying the groundwork for the inevitable correction. The role of bear markets. If bull markets are periods of euphoria and indulgence, bear markets are their necessary counterweight. They appear cruel at first glance, inflicting losses, closing businesses, and eroding confidence. Yet beneath the pain lies a deeper function, correction. A bear market forces the system to acknowledge what it has ignored. Valuations return to reality, malinvestments are exposed, and enterprises built on little more than cheap credit or fashionable stories are brought to account. This process is not merely destructive, it is disciplinary. In times of contraction, investors cannot afford complacency. They become selective once more, asking hard questions that were glossed over during the boom. Does this business have a viable model? Does it generate real demand? Can it withstand pressure without the crutch of constant liquidity? Companies that cannot answer these questions collapse. Those that can survive, adapt, and sometimes even thrive. Joseph Schumpeter described this dynamic as creative destruction, the paradoxical process by which capitalism renews itself. The bear market, by wiping away the weak and unproductive, clears the ground for new growth. Capital that would otherwise remain trapped in stagnant ventures is released, able to flow toward more resilient sectors where genuine innovation and productivity gains are waiting. In this sense, downturns are not the enemies of progress, but its enablers. They sharpen the distinction between noise and signal, between speculation and substance. Seen this way, recessions and bear markets are not interruptions to the economic story. They are the punctuation that gives it shape. Without them, the narrative would be a blur of undifferentiated expansion, a story without tension, discipline, or renewal. Modern policy and the fear of pain. In the past half century, and especially since the global financial crisis of 2008, governments and central banks have become increasingly reluctant to allow the natural corrective power of recessions to take hold. Every tremor in the market is met with intervention. Interest rates slashed to zero, liquidity pumped through quantitative easing, balance sheets expanded in the name of stability. The logic is simple enough. Recessions cause suffering, so perhaps with enough ingenuity they can be prevented altogether. But this logic ignores a fundamental truth. Postponing pain does not eliminate it. It magnifies it. What results from this perpetual cushioning is not resilience, but fragility. Investors learn to expect rescue, a phenomenon economists call moral hazard. Risk-taking becomes reckless because risk no longer seems to have consequences. Companies that would otherwise fail are propped up indefinitely by cheap credit, creating an economy populated with zombie firms, businesses too weak to innovate or expand, yet too supported to collapse. These firms occupy capital and labor that could otherwise be deployed more productively, and their continued existence drags on long-term growth. The distortions extend further. Asset prices, inflated by constant intervention, cease to reflect underlying value. Markets no longer signal scarcity or opportunity with clarity. They signal the expectation of policy support. The consequence is an economy in which wealth accumulates less through productivity than through asset inflation, disproportionately enriching those who already hold capital. Inequality deepens, social trust erodes, and politics becomes more volatile. The paradox is stark. The very policies designed to avoid crisis end up building the conditions for a larger one. Each avoided downturn requires ever greater intervention to sustain, just as each fire suppressed in a forest allows more fuel to accumulate for the inevitable blaze. By trying to eliminate the natural rhythms of contraction, modern policy does not create stability. It creates the illusion of stability, while quietly constructing a system that grows more brittle with every cycle. Case study: COVID-19 as accelerant. The pandemic recession offered a vivid demonstration of how crises, though devastating, can also accelerate structural transformation. In early 2020, entire industries ground to a halt almost overnight. Hospitality chains shuttered, airlines grounded their fleets, and countless small businesses found themselves unable to survive. The human and economic cost was immense. Yet even as whole sectors collapsed, the downturn exposed which business models were fragile illusions and which had the resilience to endure. One of the most striking shifts was in the world of work. Social distancing and lockdowns forced a global experiment in remote employment. What had once been a marginal perk became the default mode of survival for millions. Tools like Zoom, Slack, and Microsoft Teams, previously niche or supplementary, became essential infrastructure. The crisis did not invent these technologies, but it propelled them years forward in adoption, revealing the hidden demand for a more flexible digital workplace. This transformation carried a profound knock-on effect for real estate. Businesses discovered they no longer needed to lease vast offices with all the taxes, maintenance, and utility costs they entailed. It was often far cheaper to invest in software and equip employees directly. A new model emerged. Banks and corporations sending laptops and headsets to customer support agents at home, equipment that could be returned at the end of employment. What began as an emergency measure soon crystallized into a long-term reconsideration of how and where work is done. The consequences for commercial real estate were immediate and far-reaching. Office towers in major cities, once the crown jewels of corporate prestige, saw rising vacancies as tenants downsized or abandoned leases altogether. The economic logic had shifted. Why carry the weight of prime urban square footage when distributed teams could operate more cheaply and flexibly? Landlords and developers, accustomed to steady demand, were forced to reconsider their models, experimenting with co-working spaces, shorter leases, and hybrid use developments. At the same time, the gravitational pull of work began to shift outward. Suburbs and smaller cities experienced a revival as employees no longer needed to cluster around central business districts, choosing instead to prioritize affordability, space, and quality of life. What began as a public health necessity evolved into a structural rebalancing of where and how society organizes its economic activity. Transportation told a parallel story. Airlines, car makers, and oil producers endured unprecedented losses as mobility collapsed. Yet from the wreckage emerged new imperatives. The vulnerability of old models underscored the urgency of more efficient and sustainable alternatives. Investment surged toward electric vehicles, expanded charging infrastructure, and even speculative projects like small modular nuclear reactors to power future aircraft. What seemed like collapse at first glance also contained the seeds of reinvention. Equally significant was the revaluation of what might be called the humane sectors of the economy. The crisis laid bare the inadequacy of mental health services, the fragility of public health systems, and the centrality of biomedical innovation. Capital began to shift toward these areas. Biotech firms racing to develop vaccines and therapies, biomed companies building the tools for mass testing and telemedicine, and mental health platforms responding to the silent epidemic of isolation. These sectors, long underfunded relative to their importance, suddenly became focal points of survival and resilience. In hindsight, the pandemic showed more than the vulnerability of legacy systems. It revealed where the next opportunities for growth and innovation lie. The businesses that endured were those attuned to flexibility, sustainability, and human needs. The collapse of the old created the conditions for the rise of the new, not just in technology and transportation, but in the very architecture of care, health, and well-being. COVID-19, brutal as it was, did not only show us what was fragile, it showed us where the future must be built. The long-term investor's lens. For those who invest with patience rather than panic, bear markets are not simply threats, they are opportunities in disguise. When valuations collapse, fear dominates, and liquidity dries up, the survivors of downturns become uniquely valuable. These are the companies that have proven they can withstand stress, adapt to changing conditions, and generate demand even when the environment is hostile. In the aftermath of a bear market, they stand leaner, with fewer competitors, and often with a sharper focus on innovation. History is filled with such examples. The dot-com crash of the early 2000s destroyed hundreds of speculative internet startups, but from the wreckage emerged Amazon and Google, companies that had the substance to survive and the vision to scale in the next cycle. The financial crisis of 2008 bankrupted many banks and exposed reckless leverage, but it also created space for the rise of more disciplined institutions and, eventually, the fintech sector. The COVID-19 recession followed the same logic. Countless firms folded, but those that endured found themselves propelled into the center of a new economy defined by digital infrastructure, healthcare innovation, and sustainable technologies. For the long-term investor, downturns therefore serve a dual function. They offer the chance to acquire high-quality companies at depressed valuations, and they act as filters that highlight which sectors and firms are best positioned for the future. The key is not to chase every recovery rally, but to discern which survivors represent genuine engines of growth. In many ways, the market itself does this filtering by withdrawing capital from the unsustainable and concentrating it where resilience and demand exist. The bear market performs the hard work of due diligence on behalf of investors willing to look beyond the panic. This perspective requires discipline. It is easier to follow the crowd in times of euphoria or to flee in times of collapse. But those who view the cycle as ecological rather than catastrophic, as renewal rather than mere destruction, are better able to align with its deeper rhythm. They recognize that the companies which endure downturns often become the giants of the next expansion. To invest through a bear market is to bet not only on survival but on transformation. Pain is function, not flaw. It is tempting to see recessions and bear markets as failures, as if they were glitches in the machinery of capitalism that clever policy could one day eliminate. Yet this view mistakes symptom for system. The downturn is not an interruption of progress. It is one of its engines. It clears the ground of excess, restores discipline to investors and institutions, and forces capital to flow toward what is resilient and necessary. Without it, the cycle of growth would collapse under the weight of its own illusions. Modern policy, in its determination to suppress pain, too often forgets this truth. By cushioning every fall, by flooding markets with liquidity at the first sign of distress, it creates a fragile prosperity that rests on unsustainable foundations. The result is not stability but brittleness, not resilience but dependency. Each intervention forestalls correction but ensures that when it comes, it will be larger and harder to manage. Like forests deprived of fire, markets deprived of downturns grow dangerously overgrown. Kicking the can down the road does no benefit to anyone other than those closest to the spigot of funding. It entrenches privilege at the top while leaving society more fragile at the base. Yet the greatest opportunities for innovation, value creation, and enduring profit, not just for the investor but for the community and economy as a whole, arise precisely from the ashes of bear markets. Renewal follows collapse, and it is in this cycle that capitalism's most humane and creative energies are unleashed. To embrace the necessity of bear markets is not to celebrate suffering. It is to recognize that suffering, when acknowledged rather than denied, can be transfigured into renewal. The collapse of weak firms, the correction of inflated valuations, the reallocation of capital to sectors that serve real human needs, these are the processes by which economies evolve. Pain, in this context, is not a flaw. It is the price of transformation. The lesson is clear. Cycles cannot be abolished. They can only be distorted. The more we strive for endless expansion, the more we court catastrophic collapse. The wiser path is to accept contraction as part of the rhythm, to see in every downturn not only destruction but creation. Bear markets, feared as predators, are in fact guardians of the future, ensuring that growth is not only resumed but renewed.